This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Leandro Onati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Onati!
And...
Jeremy Cobb, but Goblin Snack calls me Remoraz.
Remoraz.
If you don't know what that's a reference to, look it up on D&D Beyond. It's a scary, scary monster.
Scary, scary monster.
You can even hear Matt Mercer tell you how it's pronounced. If you click on the little audio thing on the site, it's beautiful.
Big shout out to Goblin Snack as well. Goblin Snack's been around since like day one.
Yeah,
OG. This is honestly an OG nickname. I just hadn't gotten to it yet. I had to jump back. It was far past time for me to have said it. And you know what else I need to say?
What do you need to say, Jeremy?
I need to say that I haven't made a Tenet reference in a while, but also...
Did you see that someone asked that question of you, like you were doing a Q&A for a different show?
Oh, yes.
Someone said, what are your thoughts?
This is the same day as I'm recording the No Small Questions appearance. It is a follow-up to my appearance on the show No Small Roles as Dwayne Fabulosa. Someone asked about Tenet, and I thank you, person who asked about Tenet. I will probably answer that question.
Why?
But I also have to say, I have to shout out some new patrons.
Because we have a bunch.
Woo-hoo.
It's popping off.
It's popping off. Like popcorn right now.
Yeah.
So we have, correct me if I'm wrong, Jasper, but I'm going to start. We have Jay Mahin. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. I probably didn't.
Oh, you need to thank... Les Hillis is on the list. Just first.
Oh,
just
excuse
Les
me.
Les Hillis is first.
I skipped you, Les. Yeah. I'm sorry, Les.
Will never happen again, Les.
Les Hillis.
If he does it again, he's off the show.
Absolutely. I'll kill myself off the show. I was going to say kick myself off the show.
Wow, today has been a day.
It's been a day.
That was the worst Freudian slip I've had on air.
It's Friday and it's a pandemic.
Les Hillis. Thanks, Les. Thanks, Jayma. Thanks to Hugh Cunningham. One of my good friends in elementary school was named Andrew Cunningham. So I have a long positive history with Cunninghams. John Bader, or better. Sarah Sneed. I also went to high school with someone named Darius Sneed. He was an outstanding singer and a very nice person. Also, Jamil Cookmans. Flando Maltrisian. Great name.
Very good.
Joel Robertson. Quinn Schultz.
Who I believe is from a couple of characters, Quinn Schultz. Shout out to the couple of characters.
Thank you. Nicholas Young. That's Gaboob.
Hell yeah.
I feel like I should say, that's Gaboob. I don't know why, but it feels like it. And Hannah Tucker McClellan. Perhaps named after the famous Civil War general, George McClellan, leader of the Union forces for much of the Civil War.
Related.
Until he was fired. Perhaps a descendant of George McClellan.
What a thing that would be.
Look, he was talented but overly cautious. Mm-hmm. And finally, Caribou Puppy.
Yeah, Caribou Puppy!
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
Let's make them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
That sounds adorable. So a little puppy with like caribou antlers.
It's so much fun. That'd be so
its
much
bark
fun.
Is it makes noises halfway between a bark and a caribou scream.
Oh, wow.
Just like
that noise needs to go in the opening song. That noise you just made.
Please do. Please do.
Oh, wow. Massive shout out. The patrons are coming in thick and fast. Thank you so much. It means.
Thank you.
It's like, you know, it's been incredible, the level of support that we've been getting recently and the difference it's making. And we're putting that money to good use, making things even better for the future. So thank you very, 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 very much.
Lining Jamal's pockets.
Indeed. He is getting some, he's getting some silk lined pockets because Unati will not pay him any out of her gold. Old stash.
His diet is too rich. He's going to get gout. Give Jamal gout. That's the new.
No! He's a
give
child.
Jamal gout.
He's a child. A benevolent child, but a child
he's
nonetheless.
He's not benevolent. He's a tyrant. He deserves gout.
He deserves it.
Some people just deserve gout.
No, Jeremy, don't speak too loudly. I hear you. He's just in the next room. So today, halflings, we have been keeping close tabs on a lot of the current news stories, and we found there is an article in the Hollywood Reporter, which is reporting on Ray Fisher's experience working on Justice League, and sort of more specifically post Zack Snyder leaving and Joss Whedon coming in. And we just thought it would be an interesting topic for us to discuss, because a lot of what goes into in the article itself is about like the way the character is portrayed and the way that he felt some white execs and the white director approached that task of representing a black character, and as very explicitly the first black superhero in the DCU. So it kind of builds up for quite an interesting conversation. So we thought we would get stuck into that a little bit today, and very specifically again about the representation of the character specifically, because there's a lot. We will put a link in the show notes below, because there is a lot in this article, but it's a good read and it's an interesting one, and I think it raises several interesting points we often talk about. So one of the first big points that I pointed out, and I think is an interesting thing to talk about, is that the writer and the director both acknowledged the fact that they were white. This is back when Zack Snyder was still on board, and they discussed in this part of the article, they discuss about the fact that they felt that Cyborg's story was sort of at the heart of the movie. They wanted Cyborg's story to be very important. They thought they took the kind of mantle of the first black superhero in the DCU as an important one, very seriously, they've said here. And with a white writer and a white director, this is a quote, sorry, from the writer Terrio. With a white writer and a white director, we both thought that having the perspective of an actor of color was really important. And Ray was really good with the story and the character, and he became a partner in creating.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Victor, which is the name of Cyborg.
Victor Stone.
Victor Stone. Ray Fisher goes on to say that he felt that it was that having his parents both being portrayed as two genius level black people was something that you don't see every day, and important. And he talked about the fact that he felt that it was important that he was representing the first black superhero in the DCU. It's quite a big. I feel like it's quite a big mantle, right? Like,
yeah, it is.
When Black Panther dropped, like, it was a big deal. You know, it was a very, very big
global
deal.
Global phenomenon.
Yep.
But kind of like, I guess my first instinct there is drawing parallels in that where the character of Black Panther was given endless amounts of agency and license within this movie to celebrate the kind of culture and everything that surrounds them. I guess that's where Ray Fisher comes from. A lot of what he says here is the fact that it feels like his story post Zack Snyder leaving was then not the same story. So I can attest, I've watched the films, I've watched both versions, the backstory with his mum is no longer mentioned in the show, and the backstory with his dad is very, very minimal within it. So what was quite a big plot point, quite a big part of the character development for him, for his character, is completely
saying that in the Snyder cut there's a ton more backstory for the character than there is in the original, the Whedon cut, I guess, or the official released version of the film.
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
I've heard he's almost the protagonist of this. I haven't seen either version of the movie, but I've heard that he's kind of the protagonist of the Snyder cut.
Yes, he is. Yeah. He absolutely is one of the main focuses of the Snyder Cut. It gets a lot of backstory in terms of like what happened to his mum, the relationship that he has with his dad, why that is so complicated. In the original release cut, I don't think we see Cyborg for like the first hour nearly of the movie. And he kind of comes in and speaks very little and has very little to do with the whole thing. And it could be in part to do, you know, what I can discuss later in the in this particular article, but I guess my initial thought, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this, is like the writer and the director, first of all, they got Ray Fisher involved in the creation of the character, which I think is, it's not an ideal situation in that if you're trying to premiere, I guess, a black superhero, and you want to center that story, it might be good to have other people involved at least POCs, if not black, to give their input so that it's not all just down to the actor to create.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Tell you how to create the character.
I mean, the thing is that happens so often in the industry, it's actually staggering. If I had a dollar for the amount of times I was relegated to the role of resident black person in a room, I wouldn't need to be an actor.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I'd be loaded. I'd be sitting in Bora Bora right now. And it's infuriating, whether it be theater, film, TV, voice work, even sometimes, the amount of times I've had to do a secondary job, which is to then act as essentially the dramaturge, which I'm not being paid for, right? Only giving me my actor's fee. I've got to now come in and speak for a whole bunch and speak for my entire race, first of all, regardless of any difference in creed and culture. Then on top of that, I must also go home and do the work and come in and be the character while also giving your cliff notes. Pay me, fool. It's 2021 and it's a pandemic. I got a job.
So that would be my first kind of like where I think Ray Fisher speaks very highly of Zack Snyder and of the writer Terrio. I think that the issue for me is that like Chris Terrio, thank you. For some reason his full name didn't make it into my notes.
Terrio is a real person. I think Terrio is a person.
Well, I'm sorry, Terrio, because you did not write this movie.
Look, I mean, you know,
it's O'Terry. It
shows sensitivity on their part, but again, it must be understood that it's not the responsibility of the actor to come in and do the job of the dramaturge or the researcher.
Yes,
it just isn't.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Although, interestingly enough, see, because in my brain, there's this running thing of like, what would have happened if Black Panther had debuted in an Avengers film? But he did kind of, because kind he of. Debuted in Civil War.
Civil War, yeah.
But Civil War was written by two white guys and directed by two white guys. Mm-hmm. And Black Panther was treated with much more respect in that movie than, I think, Cyborg, from what it sounds like. And it's not just from you, Jasper. I've heard from multiple people that Cyborg is just kind of there in the original cut of the film. I wonder if the distinction here is not necessarily a fact. It may be tied to the people involved, but I also wonder if it's because Black Panther was slated to have his own movie from the get-go, whereas I'm not aware if I don't think Cyborg ever had plans for if they ever had plans for a Cyborg movie.
As far as I'm aware, he was contracted in to appear in the Flash movie, but then there was also a dispute over the fact that he was being billed as a cameo, even though he was required for something like 3 weeks or 2 weeks of filming, and he was like, "Nah, that's not a cameo, my dudes."
That's not a cameo.
And so therefore,
I'm like
ended up
seven
not.
On the call sheet,
yeah,
my
now
guy?
A supporting character in the film.
Yes, and I'm playing a character who is like the lead in other. Do you know what I mean? Like it's so anyway. No, he wasn't. I don't think he was slated to have his own film. But also, I think that I completely agree, because what I was about to say is some of the elements that I think that are very good in Civil War is like the theme of Black Panther, like those are like incredible like drum theme that you hear every time Black Panther turns up. They already had made that for Civil War. So like did you know what I mean? Like there's still that essence of culture and of history. And even though we're not getting it yet, like we're going to get it in a later movie. We're still getting a sense that there is care and going into the origins of this character. And I think that what is so telling of this is the fact that Joss Whedon felt it appropriate to come in and just cut out all of the
Cyborg stuff,
the Cyborg backstory that humanizes that character.
The article seems to frame it as them cutting it because Whedon was brought in to make the movie lighter and happier, and I guess Cyborg has a tragic backstory, and that may well be the case. But what you do end up with is you are basically neutering the only Black character in the film, the only prominent Black character in the film. You're just removing all of the weight and all of the meaning from that character. It's just that they're there now.
I wanted to kind of bring this up a little later, but I'll throw this in now, just I think it's kind of important, which is that throughout the article, it talks constantly about stereotypes and how the execs and the director, like in Joss Whedon, were terrified of being of any way stereotypical of anything. And so one of the things in the article here is basically that Ray Fisher was told that he was that it was a problem. It was problematic that he only smiled twice in the movie, and they could not portray that they could not portray an angry Black man at the center of the film. And apparently Joss Whedon was specifically brought on, and this is the quote from the exec Berg Johns, I think his name is John
Jeff
Berg
Jones?
Sorry
oh, John Berg
John Berg sorry I've said that name a few times now. It's sorry, John Berg. It sounds a bit
Jeff John Berg.
Jeff John Berg. John Jacob Jingleheimer. John
Berg.
Jeff Berg. So
Jeff
Joss
Johns?
Whedon was brought on to specifically add joy and hopefulness to all six superheroes. The conversations were, they were always conversations,
Batman.
Yeah, about adding, about avoiding stereotype of race, gender, or sexuality.
Okay, so
yeah, here's my thing, and then I'll throw it to you guys. When it comes to stereotype, and I sort of said this, we were having a little discussion off air, is that I feel like we can go way too far and you strip someone of any relation that they might have to the audience of whom they're supposed to represent, right? And so for me, when you say, oh, the stereotype of an angry Black man, for me, it no longer is a stereotype if you provide the context for why the Black man is angry.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? If you don't provide context, there is a stereotype.
Yeah, like people weren't angry that T'Challa was angry in Civil War.
The whole film, he was angry. The whole film, he was just
except
an angry
the,
black
the
dude.
A couple minutes at the beginning when he was happy because his dad was alive. As soon as his dad is murdered, he's like, I want to avenge my father's murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no one was angry about that because it was completely understandable that a person would be upset because their parent was killed.
So yes, adding joy, hopefulness, and happiness to all six superheroes, it's like, I feel like it speaks a lot to the sort of general, slightly jumbled feel, I think, to the DCU that a lot of people criticize. Don't get me wrong, I fully understand there are people who really, really enjoy the DCU movies. I'm not saying that you shouldn't enjoy the DC movies. I think that if you enjoy them, that is awesome. But I think that, like, tonally, there's always been a bit of a question is like, okay, what are we aiming for? Are we going for Batman Begins here? Or are we going for like, Guardians of the Galaxy type thing, which is what they tried to do with Suicide Squad,
right? Or Batman v Superman.
Or Batman v Superman. And so I think that you're always going to encounter this issue when you take what was Zack Snyder's vision to make this very gritty, very real kind of superhero movie in what his original take for Justice League was, and then try and make it into like Guardians of the Galaxy. Do you know what I mean? Like
Avengers.
Or even
Avengers. Because I think that's really what they were going for. They weren't going all in on the comedy.
Sure.
They just wanted it to be like a Marvel movie.
Because they felt
like, and to be honest, I think some of the criticism of the previous two DCEU movies was merited because they were overly dour. I think that if you make a Superman movie where Superman doesn't enjoy being Superman, you might be missing the point of why Superman works as a character. Regardless of whether or not the movies were too dour or not, I think the key here is that part of that lack, like you were saying, Jasper, as a result of the efforts to remove that dourness, or at least we wanted it to be sweet and dour. They ended up gutting Cyborg as a character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but you can't have light without shade, right? I don't understand why. Mm. And okay, cool. All of the nonsensicalities aside, obviously there were real reasons why Snyder had to pull away, but then to bring in somebody who isn't necessarily even tonally in like the same place, I'm just like,
they'd already brought him in though.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
Part of why he left, like, he didn't just leave because of the tragedy that occurred. I mean, that was a huge part of it, but it was also because DC was putting huge amounts of pressure on the dude and had already brought Whedon in. He was just in the wings, like crouching there like a gargoyle.
What's happening in this production company? What happened in pre-production phase? Like when we were planning? What is there a brief for DC? Like, do we have a plan? Is there somebody leading it? Is there a captain? I don't know, because it just looks like MS to me.
But it sounds like there's multiple captains.
I think that's the problem. Yeah, there's too many captains, if anything. And I just really can't get away from this thing of that robbing someone of any link to an audience. For me, I remember watching the first version of Justice League thinking, why is Cyborg playing a white man? Like, that genuinely, the characterization of that character, he was supposed to be living in like a Brooklyn apartment with his like black dad and like a relatively like a black neighborhood and whatever, and he was just like, why, hello there, I am Cyborg. And I was like, what the fuck?
I'm
like,
sorry.
This is such a weird, really, you know, it just felt like so, I didn't believe. Yeah, I was like, I don't believe that you grew up in this neighborhood. I don't believe that these are your friends. I don't believe that, and for all this, like, oh, he didn't smile enough. I was like, brother smiled like once or twice in this movie. Like, and the thing is, this is where you need to get your actor on board, because you could tell even when he was smiling, he was not smiling.
It was like,
if you watch the clip, we should probably get onto this bit. If you watch the clip where he says, booyah, and they put it in the trailer. So I'll read this next bit and get your thoughts, because I think this is one of the more, this bit for me, I was like, I felt this. And I was like, this hurts me as an actor. Like, this really, really hurts me. Tensions escalated when the issue of having Cyborg say booyah arrived.
It really is.
Honestly,
the phrase had become a signature of the character thanks to the animated Teen Titans version of Cyborg.
Okay,
which is great. Honestly, is great, I do like
which
that
is
show.
Great, but it's tonally a million miles away from what they are making. And also, it's Teen Titans, not Justice League.
Yeah.
Cyborg does not say Booyah in the Justice League animated show, which is just as campy, it's just a bit more serious. Like, he still doesn't say Booyah in it because it's... Anyway, Fisher says that he had approached Snyder about using the line, but the director did not want any catchphrases. He managed the situation by putting the words Booyah in signs within the film as like little Easter eggs, which, you know,
that's cute.
That's a cutesy. I'm like, okay, I get that. Fisher said that he didn't want to use the words himself because he thought that in a live action thing, it plays out very differently to an animated series, and thought that black characters in pop culture with defining phrases such as Gary Coleman's What You're Talking About Willis or Jim Walker's Dynamite would basically, it reads very differently. And he said, and then he basically proposed the question, why is the only person with a catchphrase in this movie the only black character?
Yeah.
There you
Which
go.
I think is super valid.
Yeah.
So now we have this whole discussion, this whole argument. There's some shenanigans that I won't even go into, in which Joss Whedon was quite clearly being antagonistic towards him on set the day he had to say the line, but I won't go into it because I don't think we need to waste our breath on Joss Whedon at this point, having heard everything that we've heard about him. So that all aside, there is now a trailer. One of the main trailers they used for the movie, no character says any lines in it. We just get a nice shot, hero shot of each of the lines until right at the end, it zooms in on Cyborg and he goes, Booyah. And it's the most lackluster reading of a line.
Emphasis on the boo.
You know. Yeah. Like, it is.
Why did you even bother asking for his opinion then? Like, why? I mean, yes, there was a handover here. There was a little bit of, like, a relay race happening here. Cool, fair enough. But then why did you bother then? What was the point? You should have just done what you wanted to do in the first place and cut him a check and moved on with your lives.
I think it
it did. I think the initiative changed. I think that's what we see here is in contrast to Marvel, and maybe this is why some of these events occurred the way that they did. In contrast to Marvel, where everything seems to come back to Kevin Feige as the head, the DCEU seemed to be initially conceived as a partnership with Zack Snyder directing the movies and kind of conceiving of the tone, but Jeff Johns kind of providing the comic book knowledge and providing the other perspective. But clearly the studio, once they got rid of Snyder, it sounds like Johns kind of got turned into a cog in the machine. Mm-hmm. And whatever interest that Johns may have historically had in representing diversity, because as the article acknowledges, he has been responsible for trying to push for diverse characters in comic books. He's a very
champion Cyborg in the comics. Like I'm pretty sure
he's the one who put him in the Justice League.
He put him in the Justice League and do you know what I mean?
He's so the reason he's in the film.
Excellent.
But at this point, what I hear when I read the comments that Jeff Johns makes, because throughout the article, Jeff Johns pops up as somebody who's trying to smooth out what basically corporate is asking for and convince Ray to go along with what corporate wants. Mm. And it sounds like he was in a position where he didn't have the kind of power that someone like Kevin Feige had, where Kevin Feige could be like, no, he's not saying it.
Yeah.
And I fully believe that Jeff Johns probably, I don't know. That's the thing, though. He may have brought it back up. It may have been one of those things that Jeff Johns had wanted him to say originally. Because I remember in the article, they mentioned that Joss Whedon said that Jeff told him that Cyborg has a catchphrase. And that was how it got in. So who knows? It's a mess. But I'm not going to sit here and try and absolve Jeff Johns of guilt. But it sounds like he was the corporate guy. By the end of it.
Well, this is an interesting quote about something that Johns had said to Fisher, which might be good to throw in now. Johns told Fisher to play the character less like Frankenstein and more like Quasimodo.
Yeah.
The quote goes on. Fisher says in order to demonstrate the look he wanted, Johns dipped his shoulder in what struck Fisher as a serval position. To Fisher, there was a big difference between portraying a character who was born with a disability versus one who was transformed by trauma. He felt that Cyborg was a kind of a modern-day Frankenstein and didn't have any intention of playing him in a jovial cathedral-cleaning way.
Guys, there are literal people who've made their entire careers about cultural sensitivity. I don't understand why we're here.
Yeah.
Like, there are literal people who have entire careers about this. Mm. And you are Warner Brothers. You can pay them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think this is the quote here that really sticks out to me, though, is the fact that Fisher clearly had his... he clearly had a very strong opinion about this in the fact that he said, you know, and I think a very eloquent point, saying portraying the character as someone like is very different portraying a character with someone who is born with a disability versus someone who is transformed by trauma.
That
for me shows a very an emotionally intelligent person trying to say, look, this is going to come across in the wrong fucking way if I start playing Quasimodo with this character. Not to mention he's supposed to be Cyborg, an elite level warrior type. Do you know what I mean? So if he starts acting with a hunch to be funny, like
I don't think that's what they were suggesting. I don't have a problem at all between the comparison or with a comparison between Quasimodo and Frankenstein in contrast to this character. I think the issue is that they were trying to make him they were trying to change the character in a way that didn't work for the character that they had created.
Well, it does specifically say that he dipped his shoulder, like, in
Quasimodo. Quasimodo was a hunchback. Like, he was doing a quasi... If you do a Quasimodo pose, you look servile.
No, absolutely,
you can't do Superman as Quasimodo. Like, yes, as part of the character.
But that's exactly what I'm... Yeah, sorry, I think we're on the same page in this. What I'm saying is that the character itself... It doesn't make any sense for the character itself, let alone the connotations then that come with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the connotations of him, because it sounds similar to shucking and jiving is how I would describe the way that certainly the way that it sounds like it came across to Ray Fisher.
Yeah.
Yes.
It sounds uncomfortably close to other stereotypes, like such as the Uncle Tom stereotype. Mm-hmm. And look, that and the Sambo stereotype, like there's a lot of nasty, and I don't think that look, and it's entirely possible that Geoff Johns meant that, but I feel like once you say Quasimodo and then hunch your shoulder, you're going to look I don't know, but I agree. It would be the wrong choice for that character as they created him. It just doesn't make sense. And I think Ray Fisher has a good point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he goes on, and I think this is one of the things that I would like us to discuss, because I think this is a very astute point, which is that it was like he was assuming how black people would respond. And this is in response to stereotypes. Into how he was playing the character, how he's portraying the character as quote unquote potentially like an angry black man, etc. He was assuming how black people would respond rather than taking advice from the only black person, as far as I know, that had any kind of creative impact on the project. So Ray Fisher there is saying he's the only black person that had any input on the project. Mm-hmm. And instead of just... So I think it goes even a step worse to what you were saying, Inati, because it's not like, hey, would you mind? Mm. It's like, hey, we know you're over there, but we're not even going to ask. We're just going to make you do shit, which...
And I think this happens a lot with POCs on sets in theatre, especially when, A, you've built something in tandem. Now, if you're working in a good relationship, and I can only think that Zack Snyder and Fisher had a good working relationship, but then when you are worried with what corporate is going to say, when you are also... Didn't Warner Brothers also do American Gods, or am I insane?
We can check.
And when you are worried about... When you're putting something out into a climate where there is a lot of heat around such issues,
it's produced by Fremantle North America and distributed by Lionsgate Television.
Thank you very much. I'm incorrect. It's fine. That's a mute point. But when you are like portraying something within a climate where things are quite heated, there is a tendency on the other side of the camp, be they allies or malicious, where you get too gentle. Yeah. You ask for the information and then you become too tentative to the point where it completely dilutes and you in fact fall straight into sparkling racism. Right. Mm. When you could have just trusted the POC artist who is telling you this is my lived experience and I understand this experience, and just because I may come off as quote unquote angry black man to you, that is not necessarily incendiary. And also, black people are angry. I don't know what you want me to say. We're mad as hell. Like, I don't know what you want me to say. And if you make me shuck and jive, you're just actually going to be pouring napalm onto the fire. I don't know what you're thinking.
And I don't understand the arrogance of it to suggest that if you are, and I mean this in no offensive way, because I will say the same thing as a male, I would not presume to be able to always diligently and accurately portray female experience. I would not presume to do that.
And on the other,
so therefore, I don't understand why white writers feel that they have the agency to always accurately portray a person of color. Like if you write something in a very sensitive and appropriate way, and you show it to a person of color who's going to then portray that character, maybe listen if they've got a couple of like, hey, this that feels
a little sticky.
You know what I mean? Because, and that's not a reflection on you and your sensitivity. That is just a reflection on your lived experience, which you don't have.
Yeah, an unconscious bias.
I think that appears to have been something that really entered the picture when Snyder left. Because it sounds like they went out of their way to collaborate with Ray Fisher. I think you guys had said earlier, it would have been, Unati, as you mentioned, it would have been helpful to not just have Ray Fisher on this. I actually just did a quick series of Google searches. At least on the Wikipedia page for Justice League, everybody who's listed like at the top are the director, the producers, the screenplay, the story, the cinematography, the editing, all of those people are white. So in that sense, I mean, it looks like Ray has a lot. But yeah, what appears to be the only black person prominently involved with the project, they should have brought in additional person. But still, they were making an effort to actually try and listen to lived black experiences. And it sounds like after Snyder left and Whedon entered, there's literally a line in here that says, "We don't make Joss angry." Like they were trying to avoid. Fisher turned to Johns, who he said had presented himself as a kind of mediator. So Jeff Johns. Fisher says his ultimate response was, "We can't make Joss mad." And this was after Ray Fisher had originally raised some objections to the Whedon's initial draft of the script.
Yes.
The changes that he had made.
Which I think very specifically was about axing like his mum's storyline from the backstory, where again, very explicitly it portrayed both of his parents as like geniuses, basically, like very intelligent people. And so there was clearly a very pointed reason for doing that. There was clearly a very pointed reason that they wanted to portray him as not being, you know, him as having, you know, a very well learned whatever parents, because that felt like something that they hadn't been represented, etc. So like, I think that's a perfectly valid, you know, thing. Yeah. And then to be told, no, we can't make the director angry. Like, what the fuck?
Well, because Whedon had already been extremely dismissive of Fisher. It actually says that, it has a quote, says, "It feels like I'm taking notes right now, and I don't like taking notes from anybody, not even Robert Downey Jr." And other sources on the project say that Whedon was similarly dismissive of Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa. when they questioned new lines. I mean, look, that sounds pretty similar to a lot of other famous Hollywood screenwriters that came up in the 90s. So, but it's very much an egotistical position compared to what it sounds like Zack Snyder had a much more collaborative
experience.
Approach.
Yeah.
It's pretty even egotistical. I don't like taking notes. It's just kind of like, dude, come on. There's got to be a better way to say that.
And also not even a better way to say that. You're making a movie with a whole bunch of people. What do you mean you don't like taking notes? I don't understand. Like, you're at the helm of the team. You can't keep track of, you don't even know what your gaffer's busy doing right now. Calm down.
This is a $300 million movie. There is no way that you know what those $300 million is being spent on.
Do you know what I mean? Okay, Spider. Mike, calm down, like, relax, like, chill out. Like, what are you doing? Who do you think you are? The Master? We're not on Buffy the Vampire Slayer anymore. Relax.
Calm yourself. That genuinely feels like, you know, he coming from, I think, places of total autonomy, and then coming into this environment where, you know, people were pushing back, people were kind of used to being a part of a collaborative process, which it seemed like they had. Which actually, you know, as much as, again, I'm not the biggest fan of these films by any stretch of the imagination. And I remember finding it a bit strange when they were like, all the actors were like, no, release the Snyder Cut. And like, having watched it, like, I don't necessarily know if it's that much better, but like, I can definitely see why, as actors, that's more true. Like, it feels like a more truthful representation of the movie, because, I mean, Jesus, like, it's a different movie. It's just a completely different movie. Two hours long.
Yeah.
It's 4 hours. The Zack Snyder cut.
Longer than any of the Godfather movies. It's the length of the extended version of Return of the King.
Yeah, like, no wonder they had time for his backstory. It's like, it's a long old
Kenneth Branagh's version of Hamlet. Like, it's the whole damn thing uncut. Oh, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Wow. They could have trimmed it. I'll be honest. They could have trimmed it.
It's a little bit. I've heard the epilogue might have been very trippable.
I feel like the Snyder Cut is almost like an explanation of, guys, this wasn't the movie we were trying to make. We're so sorry.
Yeah, we're so sorry.
Here's all the footage now. Here's all of it. Please make your own assessment.
I
was going to watch something good tonight, but I think I might just sit down and watch this just so that I can see. Mm. I just want to see.
Just watch
You'll
the
be
hot
still
dog.
Watching it tomorrow. It's a long movie.
It's really long. It's
that's Lawrence of Arabia length.
Yeah, it's like, wild.
You gotta make a real good movie to earn that kind of length.
Yes.
But I really wanted to bring something up because we haven't gotten to this part of the article, but one of the major, I think the bulk of the article moves away from discussing what happened on set, and it starts discussing Fisher's attempts to actually get some of this investigated. And essentially, what the crux of that is, because obviously none of us are studio execs, but the crux of that issue seems to be that there are a lot of suffice it to say, you should read the article. It's in the Hollywood Reporter. But
we'll put a link to it in the description below.
Yes, so but the theme of it seems to be there's a strong undercurrent of this black man trying to get his point heard and just having blocks thrown up, some of them just really blatant. At one point, they literally picked a name out of a book and said, no, that person's investigating it.
Yes,
and
because specifically because it was a black female lawyer.
Yes.
They later in the investigation, so yeah, this is a good point, just because basically what happened is he called to say who's doing this investigation, and like the attorney at Warner Brothers picked a name out of a book that was picked a name of a black female lawyer and said it's this woman, which Fisher says, and I quote, like, it gave him hope for the investigation, thinking that there might be some appropriate oversight being taken because they would understand the perspective that Ray Fisher was coming from, being the only POC pretty much on set, let alone in the creative department.
I mean, counting, I guess, Jason Momoa, but he can present as white, essentially.
I think he passes as white in the film. I mean, he literally lives in like a Scandinavian village.
It's a very frustrating article to read because what you end up with is a situation where Fisher is the voice crying in the wilderness, trying to be heard, and he ends up getting painted as the angry black man, interestingly enough, in press releases by Warner Brothers, some of which are blatantly lying. Blatantly lying, to the point that Jason Momoa jumps in and is like, yeah, that's actually a lie. It's kind of messed up that you did this.
Yes, so what happened is that Ray Fisher made some comments on social media and basically was like, look, this isn't getting investigated properly and I need you guys to be able to hear my story, and they won't let me, like, you know, they won't do this for any official channels, which I have tried to ask them to do and they won't do it. So he put this statement out, at which point
point, someone leaked, and I am using big inverted commas here, some information about a, I think it's like the Frosty the Snowman movie. Leaked some information about it with Jason Momoa is like the voice of this thing. And basically Jason Momoa came out and said, like, that isn't official, that isn't confirmed.
Whoever leaked this...
Yeah, well, yeah, you might even say that's not true.
First of all, someone basically leaked the snowman have to do? I'm sorry, I'm trying to keep it.
Basically, what happened is someone leaked this story to take attention away from Ray Fisher, like on purpose. Like, this was something that was in the works and was not official, was not announced, nothing like this.
Nothing's
I think, like, Jason Momoa was, like, on a short list of people they hadn't even spoken to yet. Like, and they released this story in order to detract away from this. And Jason Momoa came out and was like, that's not true.
This is the quote on Instagram. I just think it's fucked up that people released a fake Frosty announcement without my permission to try and distract from Ray Fisher speaking up about the shitty way we were treated on Justice League reshoots. Mm-hmm. Serious stuff went down. It needs to be investigated and people need to be held accountable. That's a direct quote from his Instagram.
You see,
and that is also, go ahead, Unati.
This is sparkling racism. And also, this is what happens at upper levels when that much, any amount of money actually is involved.
Yep.
Like, this all comes down to cold, hard cash. The reason why you can't upset Joss is because they're too worried about how much they have to pay him and whether they can find somebody else to bring on. So everybody's got to tiptoe around everyone. But then, you know, like, is the actress going to walk? No, they're contractually bound for 4 years. They're making a lot of money, but arguably less, far less than the execs, yeah? So you just have this game where you're pitting everyone against each other. And even if you try to go through the proper channels, no one is going to dare piss off our Lord and Savior Joss Whedon for whatever reason. Like, why? Like, this industry keeps protecting these people. It's so insidious. And until, like, those execs at the top are dealt with, and there are more people of color sitting in those rooms, no one is going to take anything seriously, whether you're talking about gender, you're talking about ableism, you're talking about racism, you're talking about any of these, you know, isms in society. And it's infuriating, because even if you take the proper channels, you are always going to be palmed off because you do not have buying power. And I'm sorry, okay, right,
I completely and wholeheartedly agree. It's one of the most infuriating things. Then you always get met with the, like, oh, you know, we're looking to bring diversity in by like 2030. I'm like, just make another role,
guys,
just hire someone else. It's not like we're not talking millions here. We're just like, get a black exec in the room. It really is that easy. It's not rocket science.
It shows, like, how entrenched racism and racist attitudes are.
Absolutely.
And really, just, you could say, anti-diverse attitudes as well, in a way, because this is not just a racism issue, which is what I was leading to, which is Ray Fisher had been talking about this for months and months and months, the whole year, and Warner Brothers had smeared him, they had dismissed him, they had thrown up roadblocks, they had tried to sort of palm him off, saying, like, oh no, don't worry about it, we were taking care of it, and he was trying to get this push through, and the entire controversy that erupted about around Joss Whedon earlier this year didn't erupt because of all the things that Ray Fisher was saying. Even though multiple other people on the Justice League cast have sort of tacitly confirmed, oh yeah, it wasn't so good, but none of them came to speak up for him. However, earlier this year, when Charisma Carpenter came forward about the bad way that Joss Whedon had treated her, people came forward. And while I think it is very, very good that all of these actors came out of the woodwork and that this became a big controversy because what Joss Whedon did was wrong, I don't feel so great about having had a black man say very similar things for a year and having gotten no support, or very little, other than the statement from Jason Momoa.
Actively lied to on several occasions about the nature of investigation, all of this kind of thing.
Yeah. Not having received the same kind of support from his white colleagues as a white woman got when she came out about something that had happened much, much earlier before. Because I believe this happened on the set of Angel, Justice League came out in 2017.
A long time ago. Angel, well, it was Buffy to start with.
It was Buffy and Angel.
Yeah.
And again, that is in no way to downplay what happened to her, because what happened to her is absolutely worth it's worth becoming a controversy. But I think that this also has an unfortunate commentary on the people involved and also our society, because Ray Fisher had been saying this and people mostly ignored him or were like, oh, this guy, that was the general feel.
Yeah.
And she comes forward. It's like, oh, no. Oh, no. There's some unfortunate racial optics there.
This sounds like awful and maybe a little extreme, but like I feel like you have to be called like the N-word on set for like it to be escalated to that level. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it feels like because he wasn't saying like he either physically like assaulted me or called me X, Y, or Z, then therefore like my claims weren't taken seriously.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, this isn't really worth us like making a whole controversy. Yeah. So if you could just like quiet down a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's infuriating, but I think and you're absolutely right, Jeremy and Jasper, those are really excellent points. But I think there's something to be said also as well for this kind of build up and expansion around what Ray Fisher was doing for a year and yes, not receiving as much support. But I don't know what Charisma Carpenter's intentions were. I cannot speak for that woman at all. But I would like to hope that it was coming from a place of, oh, this person is speaking out and is hearing nothing. I now feel emboldened to speak out myself because I have clout. Because if I speak up, people are going to rally. And that's what I hope, because I would love to live in a world that was intersectional and understanding that like your anti-racism, your anti-sexism, your anti-isms have to operate on an intersectional basis. Because after that kick up and kerfuffle with Charisma Carpenter, another light was shined back onto Ray Fisher. It was like, hey, well, we forgot that. Let's look at it again. Yeah, yeah.
This interview wouldn't have happened if not for
that. You see what I mean? And I would love to hope that was a moment of going, I want to talk about something that's happened to me years ago, but I also understand that because I am a white woman, I have privilege, and it'll blow up. It'll absolutely
And it actually sounds like
up.
She was. She would have been one of the only people who said it specifically in support of him.
Exactly.
Yes, you did cite him specifically when she released the statement. So, you know.
Yeah. So, hey, thank you, first of all, Charisma Carpenter, but come on to everybody else.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
You're absolutely right. It is an indication of our society and how messed up it is. But like my dudes, if you're ever looking for an example of allyship, that's it.
Yeah, like, way to go. Well, that's like a really good example.
Here's a really interesting thing that I think, and perhaps I'm reading a little too much into this, but I feel like when one of the big things that jumped out to me is that Ray Fisher said, I was not yet indebted to Hollywood, right? So when I look on Ray Fisher's IMDb, right, this was like one of his, if not his big break, right? Yeah. This was the big moment for him. He'd done a couple things, like one episode of a TV series and like a short thing. Like he really hadn't done like a whole lot before this. And so he didn't feel like he was so entrenched in the wheel that he would like either completely ruin his career or that he was in somehow beholden to these guys for the rest of his career. Like he was kind of thinking, do you know what? Like, I hope I can get out of this and then maybe I won't have to play Cyborg for the rest of my fucking life.
Yeah.
But then you, and like for me, someone who's like a pretty straight talking person and has not been afraid to speak up about stuff in the past, someone like Jason Momoa, who released a very bland, like, hey, that's kind of fucked up, shitty stuff happened. And, you know, like it feels, that's like, I'm like, sorry, you said shitty stuff happened.
You said
that people need to be held accountable. So come on, like you've got the power to actually make them stand up. Like you've got to know that. Like as the, one of the big stars, you've got several Aquaman movies.
Henry Cavill, I wonder whether that's part of the problem.
Gal Gadot is one of the big ones because she was the other person who was raised as having had a really big problem.
But this
with
is the
Joss
thing.
Whedon.
So Gal Gadot still hasn't commented, but people have witnessed the conversations, and Gal Gadot has said, "Yeah, that's correct." So it's almost feels like they're not willing to bite the hand that feeds. But I'm like, look, if Jason Momoa, Henry Cavill, and Gal Gadot got on the phone to each other and said,
and Ben Affleck, and said,
hey, it's time. If they all did it, what's DC going to do?
Do you know
they're
going
to recast the entire Justice League assemble, guys.
Justice League, get together. Go
realize
for it.
Realize your power. Yes. Realize your power. And like, do you know what I mean? Like, they're not going to recast you as Aquaman, Jason Momoa. They're not going to recast you as Wonder Woman. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have power in this scenario, and the thing is, if you don't use it, then it's not going to improve for anyone, and all that's happening is that you're allowing this young black man at the start of his career to be continuously thrown under the bus by the machine. I'm like,
That's so fucked.
Yeah, I know.
That's so fucked for me.
I guess
I'm an angry black man, everyone.
As you guys were talking, one of the things that was really occurring to me, I think part of the reason why Charisma Carpenter's words were able to carry more weight than Ray Fisher's, perhaps, is because of how attitudes have begun to change in Hollywood because of the Me Too movement. I don't think that if she had said this when it originally happened, you absolutely would have had nearly the same controversy. In fact, it probably would have torpedoed her career.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Whereas nowadays, because of the Me Too movement, these allegations are taken much more seriously. Mm. I wonder, it was occurring to me, like, have black people had a Me Too? I guess, was that last year?
I think we're in the middle of it, but I feel like
in order for it to really work, it would be really helpful if more black people in the industry were to come forward with examples of instances when they were mistreated, because that was partly what made Me Too so effective, is that all of these women just started to come out and be like, look, this happened to me, this happened to me, this happened to me. That was where it came, Me Too. It also happened to me too.
Mm. And I think one of the things that makes this difficult, I remember when a lot of those women came forward, and Unati, please correct me if I feel like I'm, you know, off here, but I feel like the a lot of the issue was that a lot of these women, and I'm guessing a lot of these black people, much in the same way that I have done over the last few years, you're almost like so entrenched by the what is generally perceived as acceptable that you almost don't know what is unacceptable until you sit back and you kind of. So I feel like you know, there was a lot of women that kind of had to look in and go, oh fuck, I am dealing with a lot of trauma and a lot of stuff. Yeah. But I was okay with it at the time, and I think that for a lot of people that then feels disingenuous. If you were okay with something at the time, but you're still kind of dealing with the repercussions, whether it's then okay to step forward and go, whoa, actually that wasn't okay. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's a difficult thing for people, and I wonder whether that's what's holding a lot of black people back, who are thinking, well,
this is basically Fisher and Boyega, right? That's who we're looking at.
Yeah, that's literally it. And it's the younger generation,
I think,
for sure.
Also, what may also be holding a lot of black people back potentially is when you look at something like Me Too, and so I'm going to step in hot water anyway, so let's go for it. Right, in four penny, in £4. When you look at something like Me Too, you're looking at a spectrum of like women across all races, yeah? And obviously...
Just thinking the exact same thing.
So like women across all races have very different, amounts of influence, yes? So, you know, even within that movement, there were problematic issues where, you know, yes, of course, a lot of people were being heard, but a lot of marginalized women weren't being heard, and a lot of black actresses weren't being heard in that discussion. Over time, things have become more and more intersectional, and that's just what it takes. It takes a little bit of time. Sure. I think what happens then with black folk and other POCs is that despite how far we've come in the diversity push and the diversity game, we are still in the we've still got a boot on our neck. So it is incredibly, like, I'm saying these words right now, and I promise you, in my mind, I'm going, what if some exec randomly hears this one day and my future career 100%. Is completely tanked?
Unless it's Tyler Perry, we're fucked.
Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? So like, and in my own career, you know, wherever it may be at this point in my life, I have had to make tactical decisions about what I am willing to put up with and not put up with in order to make sure that I can build a foundation and get ahead.
And what you're willing to say.
You're willing to say. So I think that until more Tyler Perry's, more, you know, Issa Rae's, Ava DuVernay,
Spike Lee,
Michaela Coles, all these like great kind of creators and people who want to develop Shonda Rhimes, develop their own studios. As soon as more of them begin to rise, then I think we're going to be able to start speaking out a lot more about these things, because you've got to eat, babes. You need to chop. Food is cost money. I have rent
absolutely
to pay.
And this is a perfect time to throw out one of my favorite quotes. I believe it was a Chris Rock quote where he basically said, there are no wealthy people there are no wealthy black people in America. There are rich black people, but not wealthy black people. Mm-hmm. He said, Shaquille O'Neal is rich, but the guy who cut Shaquille O'Neal's check, he's wealthy. And that is the difference, is that right now, Tyler Perry, I think, is probably the only anyone I would class as truly the head of a global studio, like a real powerhouse studio. Absolutely. But like, in I'm talking like would rival like a Warner Brothers or a, you know, a Lionsgate or a, do you know what I mean? Like, so we're talking about potentially having one genuine powerhouse in the world. Do you know what I mean? Even for Asian culture, we have like there exist entire sects of movies like Bollywood, etc. Do you know what I mean? Of which they hold a huge amount of power and influence and money. And do you know what I mean? So like, at least there is an area you could go to. To, do you know what I mean? To be a part of that creative process, whereas there isn't for us.
The industry, I think, the crux of what you're saying, the industry is more female than it is black.
Yes.
That's really what the crux of it is.
Yeah.
There were a lot more women in Hollywood who could jump out and be like, yeah, me too, than there are black people. And certainly, like, you have, they were powerful. There were women in position. Amy Pascal's a major one. Kathleen Kennedy run Star Wars. Yeah. Like, there were women in positions of power.
Yeah. Who's the Star Wars, James Bond. James Bond executive.
There were some very, very, Laura Ziskin, I think she worked on the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, and I think has been involved with a lot of the Spider-Man movies. But like, there were a few, at least, women in high positions of power.
Enough to mean that should you have your career threatened, like, there would always be people to give you work. Do you know what I mean? Like,
the possibility existed.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas at the moment, like, Tyler Perry can only make so many films.
Do you know what I mean? And every year there are hundreds of thousands.
But they will all now feature Ray Fisher and John Boyega.
Do you know what I mean?
Because they're not getting hired by anyone else.
It's called the Fish Boy series. Fish Boy 2.
That's really at the crux of the issue, is that yes, we are at a turning point, but we're at the beginning of a rolling stone, right? Like that stone needs to start gathering some more moss and some more force. We're only at the start of it, and like, that's a perfect Chris Rock quote, because that's exactly the reason we are institutional racism is real. Please check yourself. Like, check yourself in the morning when you have that.
And
cup
when
of tea.
We are all ridiculously famous and wealthy actors, having starred in multiple movies, Three Black Halflings will form its own studio, and we will make films. It's going
to
be.
We will be the ones producing Fish Boy 4.
Booyah. The spin-off Fish Boy.
Return of the Booyah. Return of the Booyah.
Do you know what I mean? And you know what
that's what this episode should be called.
You know what the first thing I will do and mandate at the production company? We are hiring sensitivity freaking professionals.
James is going to be like the exec, like the main exec. He's going to come in and go, no. Hell no. Yes.
Joss
Whedon, get out of here. Get.
We give like everybody subtitles. He's the sensitivity halfling. Everybody's like the different kind of halfling. He's the sensitivity halfling.
Absolutely. I just love the idea of Joss Whedon just hiding in the wings of movies, like hoping that he'll get like picked for them. And people just shooing him out like, get out.
The first time I heard the name Joss Whedon was in 2007 when the original Civil War comic book series was released. I remember this because the name Joss Whedon sounded really weird to me. I was like, Joss? What?
Joss?
Joss? Like, Joss? What's this? Joss? Anyway, it was a description of all the Marvel writers in a room trying to figure out how the original Civil War comic story should end. And apparently Joss Whedon just walked in and was like, yeah, you should do this, this, and this, and then left. And they were like, all right, cool. Yeah, let's go with that. So it's like this image of him just like hiding in the around Marvel Studios, just like, yeah, you should do this.
Oh, thanks.
Hey,
where did you come from?
He's just always there.
Yeah. I'm quite nicely though. I feel like he's been replaced by the Russo brothers, who, for all intents and purposes, seem like a very wholesome dude. Two very wholesome dudes. Lots of very nice reports about him. So I did just want to give a very quick shout out, because I'd be remiss if I didn't, to before we wrap up this episode, because we've already been talking for a long time. To the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, just because I've been watching that recently, and there is some really, really fucking
nice depictions and discussions about race in this movie. The whole show. In this show. In which, like, the very reason that Sam doesn't choose to take the shield in the first place is because of his own, like intrinsic fear of what that represents. I don't want to spoil the movie for anyone, but I would just counsel you to watch it. Like, written and... Why do I keep saying movie?
Okay.
Wait till it's all out, binge it all at once, and it'll kind of be like a long movie. Okay, that's what I'm saying. But it's
almost as long as Justice League.
Well, still probably shorter somehow.
Actually, if it's only 10 episodes and each one's 40,
It's 6 episodes, they're all about 40 minutes, so it's probably...
It's actually shorter. It might actually be shorter than Justice League. Oh my god!
So, but it is written and created by a man named, I had the thing open and now it's disappeared, Malcolm Spellman, who actually happens to be the son of A.B. Spellman, who was an African American poet and music critic who was influential in the creation of the jazz scene in America, which kind of amazing.
That's amazing.
Malcolm Spellman, who was the screenwriter for it.
Malcolm Spellman. As soon as he did it, I was like, mm-hmm.
And the whole series as a whole has been directed by a woman, a Canadian film director called Cara Scotland, I believe. I might be pronouncing that slightly wrong. But I don't think it is rocket science that when tackling sensitive issues, you have a black writer at the heart of this movie, because it intrinsically is about race. It is about race in America, and I think they handle it in a very untriggering and unproblematic way, but a way that you can see it clearly represented on screen, and you give the characters agency, and holy fucking shit, the Wakanda is the best and coolest thing when they turn up. They're going to turn up there in all the trailers, so yeah. I'm sorry if I've... That feels like a spoiler, but it's not.
It's been everywhere.
They're fucking badass. And I want to do like a whole...
They're very cool.
Yeah. I want to discuss just them in this movie.
We'll do a Disney diversity talk at some point. Yes. We can talk about the newest Marvel shows.
Yes, that would be a very good idea, actually.
Because there have been some racial complaints about WandaVision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also some celebrations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also my favorite Marvel meme probably ever, Vishon.
Oh, Vishon. If you have not seen Vishon, please look up Vishon.
I love that. It's one of my favorite memes of all time. I rarely laugh at memes. That one immediately.
It's really good.
Adore Vishon.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
We should do an episode on that.
Just on Vishon. Wagwan Wanda, me and the girl then be going, it's just too funny.
Yo, man, me and Wanda don't talk no more.
It's just, oh my god. Oh, it's like Chris Evans. What's the Chris Evans one? What's it called?
I don't know.
You need to check this out, Jeremy, if you haven't. Let me see if I can find it.
Chris Evans meme?
Yeah, hold on. Type in Chris Evans nails.
Oh, the nails. Yeah, where they give you long nails.
The acrylic nails thing. I can't remember what the name of... There's like a very specific name that they've given for this version of Chris Evans. And it's very, very funny. Because he always just holds his hands in a very like posed way. And it's absolutely...
That's great. I saw one where
I think it's actually called Jamal Evans or something. I think it's something like Jamal Evans is the name of the main character.
They put him next to Michael B. Jordan, and Michael B. Jordan has, looks like Whoopi Goldberg's hair and earrings, and it has his head up here. It's really cute.
Oh, yeah, it's very, very good. Very, very, very funny. I like it. So, but yes, this is, but this is... This has been a very... I feel like it's quite a cathartic episode for me. I feel like I got some shit out.
It's like, yes!
You know? Please, honestly, let us know what your thoughts are on this topic. I think it's an incredibly nuanced topic. There's so much to it. There's so much in this article that we didn't even touch. Mm. I will say, we kind of very purposely tried not to touch on the sort of more... insidious stuff that happened on set, just because, you know, we don't need to give credence or any more airtime to Joss Whedon as a person, as a human. I think that that's all there for everyone to see. It's not really a debate. It's just statements and facts now.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why we've kind of steered clear of that. But yeah, please let us know what you think, because I think these are discussions that need to be had. And I think that it's an interesting one for us, I think, as three people of color in this industry right now. Yeah. Like, we're all in it right now, auditioning for stuff. And, you know, I think it's an interesting time for us, and an interesting time to see, you know, what's going to happen next. You know, cast me in a movie, you cowards. No, I'm joking. It's please, if a white exec has heard this.
Please cast me in a movie. You
retract all statements.
I retract all statements. Booyah!
You now identify as strictly as mixed race. You no longer identify as black at all.
Yes. Yeah. And I will say any catchphrase.
Your name is now reason. Jasper Booyah Cartwright.
Boo right, baby, I'm here.
Buy yourself a yacht and name it Booyah on the side, you know.
What do I say? Booyah.
Yeah.
And on that booyah shell?
Reparations, you know what I'm saying?
I'm reaching for something. It's not there.
Booyah, halflings.
Booyah, halflings. But anyway, if you see Ray Fisher in a thing, go and watch it.
Yeah.
That's gonna be my thing today. Yeah. Just go and support that guy, and
Charisma Carpenter. I did not realize that she was doing that specifically in support of Ray, but that's really awesome.
Yes, that is awesome. And there are some good people in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if you liked this show, why not drop it a review? Drop us some things like that so that we can help more people find our show, because it really helps. If you want to share us on social medias and things like that, if you want to share us on social media as well.
I just saw your VO voice, like when you do little voice. Yeah. I was just like, you put your little boy attitude on. Hello.
Between me talking normally and VO voice is Korg. Somewhere in the middle is Korg. So if you would like to know more about us, Three Black Halflings, you can go over to @TBHalflings. You can also support us on our Patreon. It'd be really helpful, because that's how we like make money and stuff. So Patreon.com/TBHalflings. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Really, really glad you enjoyed the show. Oh boy. Okay.
So you say booyah in that voice.
Ah, booyah. Booyah, motherfuckers. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Booyah!
Booyah!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.